Welcome to the My Crazy Office Podcast with the authors of Working With You Is Killing Me, Working For You Isn't Working For Me, and Mean Girls at Work, Kathy Elster and Katherine Crowley. They are committed to helping you navigate the hardest part of any job, the people. And now, here are Kathy and Katherine.
Hey everyone, I'm Kathy Elster.
And I'm Katherine Crowley, and welcome to My Crazy Office.
Today we want to welcome our guests, business owners and partners of Siegel Hair Salon, Sean Shorthing, who's been here before, and his partner, Johanna Fateman. Johanna's also a musician, an author, cultural critic, and entrepreneur. Welcome. We're so excited to have you both, and Sean, to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be back again. I'm thrilled.
You're thrilled to be
absolutely
here with us.
I'm absolutely thrilled.
Well, I hope this is not the most exciting part of your day. Maybe it is.
Unfortunately, it is.
It's one of the most exciting parts of my day.
Oh, interesting.
I can take a cab to Six Flags later.
Yeah. I guess, okay, well, anyway, tell us a little bit about how you got into business together and about the business.
Well, Sean and I are very old friends. We were roommates in the late 90s in Williamsburg in a little apartment on North 6th Street. And then Sean moved back to Seattle. Well, Sean was a hairstylist in New York at Siegel, but it was owned by a friend of ours, not by us. Sean moved back to Seattle, and I was in a band for a number of years. And when my band was breaking up and we were, you know, finishing our touring,
what was the band? What was the name of your
band? La Tigra.
Uh-huh.
I decided we should buy our friend out of her business and run it together.
Pretty bold.
That's how it went. Yeah, and I was pretty excited. I had, you know, I had left New York. I hadn't had a very good time the first couple of years, aside from meeting Johanna, which is really the only, well, meeting Johanna and being introduced to Siegel are the two good things that happened to me in New York, and that was it, those two good things. So I went back to Seattle with my tail between my legs and met my now husband, boyfriend, person, Dusty, mm-hmm. owner of Publicide.com, whatever. And he same. Desperately wanted to move to New York, and I desperately did not want to when Johanna called in and said, hey, what about this great idea where we take over Siegel and I'll buy it for you and you can help me run it.
So the universe was beckoning you back.
It was dragging me back. I had no choice. Every element of the every element of my life was dragging me back to New York. But it's wonderful now.
Good.
Yeah, so I mean, I essentially put the cash up front, most of it. Sean contributed a small amount, and then over the years, he, you know, we had like a sort of a structured buy-in plan for him to become, you know, I mean, we were always 50-50 in it, you know, spiritually and emotionally, but he bought 49% over the years, and now we're partners.
It's an interesting way to do it, to mm-hmm. buy in slowly over time.
It's also amazing how it's shocking to me now, looking at other people's business models, how friendly we managed to stay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's never really gotten very hairy.
Interesting.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, that says a lot about the two of you. How did you know the business was for sale?
I mean, we were both in touch with the former owner, you know, socially, and it was sort of, you know, I sometimes babysat for her daughter. We went to the beach one day, and she was like, why don't you buy Siegel? I want to move.
Oh, there you go. That's a great way to find
out. It works for me. Why don't you buy it? That's sweet.
And, you know, we really completely redid it. Ultimately, uh-huh. it's not so similar to the business we bought initially, but I think, you know, there was some security and some historical meaning for right. us in taking over her business.
It's a great space, I will say, that you've mm-hmm. created. It was a really great space before. And I think what's so interesting is it sounds like you were starting a new phase of your life as mm-hmm. well, Johanna.
Absolutely.
So there's a synchronicity to all of it.
Yeah, and we're both, I mean, I think that both Johanna and I are equally invested in the sort of like activist culture that, you know, the West Village in the 60s and early 70s, like really encompassed, and Siegel was actually part of that and has been there for that long. So that, you know, that was really an impetus for us to sort of buy in mm-hmm. on that part mm-hmm. on that part of the revolution.
Mm, that's really interesting. So that I like that a lot. So that you both had this sort of historical commonality that you really liked that sort of bonded? I mean, Catherine and I have that also. We have, you know, a long-term vision and a historical perspective, which we're not going to reveal right now. But anyway, some other time. It has a little bit to do with world peace, but so I don't. It's kind of broad.
Okay.
But anyway, so that's a really good story. Our topic for today, we're because you're partners and we're partners, we just really thought we would pull up some partner questions. So, Logan, our first question.
I want to start a catering business, and I'm thinking of partnering with a friend of mine. We attended culinary school together, so I know that she's a very talented chef. What other things should I consider before forming a partnership?
I think it's a great question.
So do I. I mean, you know, the first thing that comes up for me with this is I can see there's two creative types going into this business potentially, and I'm curious, and I wish I could speak to the person right now. You know, it's really important when going into a business that we start to really think about, like, who is going to be the logical thinker and run the actual business aspects.
Right.
For me, in Siegel's case, I have Johanna. I can't really think in logical, rational terms, so... she's the one that takes care of the day-to-day stuff.
Like no, I agree. I was thinking the same thing, that you want complementary skills, not the same skills. That's what you mean.
Agreed.
Yeah, two great chefs do not necessarily make a great catering business, mm-hmm. and two best friends don't necessarily make great business partners. So, you know, the question is, what other things should I consider before forming a partnership? And I would say... almost everything. Like, you know, this is such a, you know, I say that as someone who's always worked with my friends. I've been in a band with really good friends and had great creative collaborations. And also, you know, at Siegel with Sean, it's also, you know, we were friends long before we started the business and the business has been great. But, you know, there's so many thorny, crazy things that come up when you start doing business with someone. And when you start doing something new, you learn a lot about another person and a lot about yourself. So I think that this person writing to you guys, I think they need to work for a catering business.
Learn about the industry. Start with that.
Learn about all the jobs that need to get done to do the business besides being great chefs.
Yeah.
And then they could consider doing this with their
partners. There's that pragmatic voice coming from Johanna. I think these two are going to go ahead and jump right into it anyways.
I think they're
not going to listen to that. So I think probably the best advice I would think is, you know, if they have access to someone like Ask 2K², you guys like immediately get into sort of a...
Come to us immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, well, I would like to speak to that notion, which is one of the... when we do partnership mediation, and we have actually done partnership mediation for partnerships that are forming, one of the things we always say is date before you get married, because a partnership really is like a marriage. So we really encourage them to take on an initial project together, do one thing, and notice everything about your partner. What time do they show up? The same time that you show up? Do they put in the same amount of effort that you put in? When you say, this is how I want to treat the customer, are they thinking the same thing? Because at the end of the day, it's the behaviors and ethics that are going to really make or break the partnership. A lot of times we partner for skill and then we break up because the personality just doesn't work.
I mean, another thing that I see that really hurts is that you may not have the same intention, the same vision for where the business is going to go. Like, you have little conversations early on. Oh, yeah, we're just going to have this business and we're going to make all this money. But one is thinking 20 million and the other one is thinking a million. You know, these are really serious conversations. What's the vision? How far do you want to go? How hard do you want to work? What do you want to build? Do you want to have staff? Maybe one does, one doesn't. So there's a lot you have to figure out. And I agree, having, you know, the dating and working on a project, you find this out. But a big thing is the ethics and the morals. That really matters. I mean, how you make decisions, if you have a problematic client, how you handle that, that has a lot to do with the depth of each person, how they really think of moral issues. I mean, we've seen people that... morally think it's okay if a client pays you twice to keep the money and another partner doesn't think it's okay. So you have that stuff you have to know.
Or partnerships that were formed on Fire Island when they were both smoking pot together and it turns out they're very different when they come back to New York.
When they're straight. We
Good work.
Yeah, we have that one. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think that I don't want to sound discouraging. I think that
a lot of the things
that I'm cautious about are things that you can learn, and you can even learn on the job.
Yeah.
You can learn how to make a spreadsheet. You can learn how to make a budget. Just because your prospective business partner doesn't know how to do that doesn't mean that they can't learn.
Right.
Or that, you know, you can't figure this stuff out together and make some mistakes and still succeed. One thing that I would add to, you know, I think what you said about having shared values is completely crucial. Another thing is, I think that both partners kind of need to have as much at stake in success as each other. Because if one person's like, this is kind of a hobby, and the other person is like, this has got to work, this is my life, this is my dream, and all my money's going into it, that's another place that you can run into trouble. And, you know, Sean and I were just like, there is no plan B.
Yeah.
This is right. going to work.
And I was lucky enough to have Johanna actually approach me and ask me to, so I didn't have to be a purely creative brain that was jumping in with somebody else. I had a person who was, you know, smart and grounded, who actually invited me to join the business with her.
Wow. But I bet that also gives you creative license. Because you know that she's there to back you, you can be creative.
Like absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And we kind of have that in our partnership, because Catherine is really good at the day-to-day, and I'm really good at envisioning. Mm-hmm. And because I know someone's going to take care of the day-to-day, I can really dream. I can really, you know, see where we can go.
I don't want to throw Johanna under the bus, too.
But, go ahead.
She's not creative, because she obviously is a very talented writer and musician and cultural critic and mother.
Thank you, Sean. And I would also say that, you know, things don't have to be black and white.
Right.
It's not like there has to be the creative person and, you know, the boring person who counts the money. You can be an exciting person who counts the money.
That's true. You can be an exciting collector of money, too.
Exactly.
We'd like to come up with creative ways to do that.
I think those people are underestimated. I think that they could be pretty hot.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had, you know, Siegel has been both of our, you know, it's our baby, and we've both, you know, seen our vision grow. So I don't see it as black and white, but absolutely it can't just be two great chefs.
Yeah. All right. So what we're saying here is that make sure that you have complementary skills in some way, that you're willing to work together, that you both have the same amount of skin in the game. I hate that statement, but I'll just say it anyway. And that you're willing to date and build the relationship, see how it goes, so you know each other's work habits and values, so that you'll know if it's going
to
work.
I think you also have to respect each other's contribution. I think that's a big one, the respect.
For sure.
Yeah.
Without it, it's a problem. I'm curious, in the music business, how partnerships work out. Like, you know, you've had some experience.
Well, I mean, I think that in the music business, or at least when you're in a band, the business is primarily creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, even more so than a hair salon. What you're doing, you know, your product is the creative vision. So it's very intense. And I think that, you know, artists, I think, traditionally learn the hard way how to handle the money, who to hire, what kind of structures to put in place to protect their interests. So, I mean, that could be a whole another show.
Yeah, really.
You know, it really is.
It's also a whole set of egos, a certain kind of ego, right?
Absolutely.
So for someone to be the leader of a band and for others to comply or collaborate or work out differences, I imagine, is a very specific mix.
Yeah.
So I know we have another question.
I've been in a business partnership for 2 years with someone who is extremely skilled at the technical end of our business, but who treats me badly. He thinks that his intellect and experience trump anything that I bring to the partnership. He constantly critiques my way of handling the staff and building our customer base, even though I'm the one who brings in the business. He devalues my input and acts hostile to me in front of our employees. Our company is experiencing amazing success, but I'm feeling unappreciated and beaten down. How can I get him to treat me with more respect?
Get rid of him.
Wow. I mean, this is not acceptable.
No, it's really
absolutely
not.
Unacceptable.
It's really not. And we unfortunately see it in partnership mediation, and it never goes well.
I mean, one thing I would say right off the bat is it sounds like this guy needs you a lot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you have a lot of leverage to make some changes or make some ultimatums, I would say, because this is really extreme. And if you're half of a very successful business, then you could take your half elsewhere and have another successful business with someone who treats you with respect.
Yeah, I'm really confused about this person being the main person who brings in the business. Also, I mean, I'm curious, like, does this person feel devalued themselves? Like, do they not feel valuable inside of the company? I sort of can't imagine being allowed to be put in a position where my partner in, you know, life or Johanna or whoever was felt like it was at all appropriate to speak to me in these ways in front of our staff.
Well, actually, that's such a good point, Sean. And I will say, I'm going to come in with the shrinky view.
Please do.
Which is, we often talk about fatal attractions. And usually in business, we're attracted to those people who we think have what we don't have, and who also have an unbelievable talent for saying the very things that go to the core of our insecurities.
Ugh. Well, and we've talked about this before in the other program. I have had that with my staff. I've just never had that with my business partner.
Right. That's good.
It happens, though. Yeah, it really does happen. And unfortunately, what you're saying is absolutely true. There's something probably in this individual. On the one hand, really bright people may seem a little wounded. And so if you're a heroic kind of person, you may take them under wing. Sure. And then on the other hand, if you're really good at sales and business, you may not have confidence in your technical expertise. And so you feel like you need this person, and therefore you end up needing the abuser.
Interesting.
I mean, I think that, to take it back to the practical, how to improve the situation. I mean, I'm looking at this description and I'm thinking, well, and not to generalize and say that people who are good at technical things are insensitive, but sometimes people who have this highly specialized knowledge are not known for being the most socially graceful.
Yeah.
Good.
That's true.
Good.
That's
communicators.
True. Yeah. Very true.
I agree with you. They're somewhat on the spectrum, you know?
Yeah. So
and
this,
a little robotic.
This guy might be being a jerk, but it's just like his style and he has no idea. Mm-hmm. So part of it might be that he needs a wake-up call.
Yeah. Pushback, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the other thing here, too, is like that I'm also just confused by, and I mean, I guess as we're talking about, is like, you know, at Siegel, we keep track of how every person comes into the business. So I don't think that there wouldn't be a way inside of our structure, which I think is pretty loose, actually, for anyone in the company to not see that this person is bringing in the majority of the business. I mean, we keep very good track of it. I'm wondering in their business, like, do they have a way of keeping track of, like, how he brings in business?
Well, the technical expert may know very well that the salesperson brings in the business. It's still devalue. He could say, you know, without my brilliance, there'd be no business to bring in.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, yeah, this person is just pathological. an asshole.
Well, that's right, right.
Exactly. And name-calling is often an interesting negotiation tactic.
Totally, yeah.
You are a mean ass.
Yeah, but I just wonder how this got here, you know?
Like, me too.
Right, like what transpired to get here. I mean, and sometimes it's too late when it gets to this point to really unravel it. And they probably should have sought help prior.
Yeah.
To getting this bad. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of partners come to us when they're ready to kill each other, and it's gotten really nasty, and just too much has come down, you know, to repair. I mean, we all have memories, you know, we're afraid to be treated poorly.
It's worth a shot, though, I think, with this person who sounds like they're, you know, slightly more, you know, not as assertive, to, like, turn around and, like, show a different side of their face.
Push back.
Push back to the person who's being dominant, right. And just say, hey, fuck you. Like, stop being an asshole to me. This isn't, you know, it's not an appropriate way to speak to me, and it's not an appropriate way to speak in front of our staff. And, like, I think you're right. I think the bully is going to, like, really stop in their tracks for a second. And in that moment, like, there's, in that exact moment where the bully is, like, questioning their own behavior, is, like, really, like, that's the spot you're aiming for.
Now, that's a really good point, because many times what the bully does is it has the other person afraid to push back.
Yeah.
And then they've kind of won, and then they keep bullying even more. So if you do push back on a bully, it usually does work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, it's interesting with dogs. If you have a dog that's an alpha dog, We're into dogs. I'm into dogs.
I'm into cats.
We're all
you're
into
supposed
dogs.
To do.
Johanna just got her first dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, excellent. So with an alpha dog, that can be very hard to train. And the thing you have to do with an alpha dog is you have to make sounds like, like you're the tougher of the two,
yeah.
Right?
Or rolling them over and like holding them on their back and like growling. I did that to my 4-pound puppy for a year and a half.
Yeah. So you can't do that with your business partner, but you could do some energetic version of that perhaps.
Sure.
And not in the meeting when he's busy, saying devaluing things, but in private, behind a closed door, you come up and just very forcefully state your case. It's not acceptable to treat me in this way. Here's what I contribute to the business. If you want to keep moving forward, this is what I need from you.
And this person also has to watch the video I was just talking about nonverbal body language.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That video?
Yeah, that video and coming at the bully, taking up all the space they can possibly take up and really forcing the bully to sort of because what usually happens in that situation is someone just to complement a situation and make it balanced, the other person usually will close in a little bit. And when that person closes in, their body is going to tell their mind, the bully's body is going to tell the bully's mind that they need to close in a little bit and receive.
Pull back. Mm-hmm. Receive.
Yeah. All right, so get a dog training book and watch the video on body language. Many times I'll say to the partner who's bullied, why don't you push back? And actually the answer they always say is, I don't want to live that way.
Yeah, I don't want to live that way.
So it's fascinating in
that
a way.
That brings a bigger question.
Well, they don't want that partnership.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But here's the thing that's intriguing about this situation is that we have people with ostensibly complementary skill sets. We have the salesperson and we have the technical person.
Right.
And they have a successful business.
Yeah.
So they both have something that
are invested.
Works on some level. So if it's just about, I shouldn't say if it's just about how he's he's treating this person, it's a big deal. But yeah, they're invested. They should be motivated to change, to keep what they have. It sounds like they have a solid business. So maybe this can work.
Well, the other piece, and it was really great that you brought up the whole thing about technical. We're talking about, that they may have intellectual intelligence, but low emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. It is worth bringing it to this person. The individual may not even be aware of the tone of the message that he or she is sending. So it is worth bringing up.
And it sounds like Johanna said, if there is all of these things that are really going great about this business, I think you're right. I think the person doesn't know how they're behaving and is probably more than likely going to be invested in changing it if it means the dissolving of the relationship and the business, which I can't see either one of them wanting that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking if they came to us, how would it all play out? And you're right. It could go either way. They could maybe have some aha moments and do some fancy work. Have we ever seen that?
Like, yes.
We have?
Yes. Well, eventually, I think one of the more bullying person shimmied out over time.
Oh.
Yeah.
But we saw some better behavior for a little bit. Yes.
That's right.
Interesting.
That's right. Yeah.
But the bully wanted to be a bully, so they left the business?
Well, I think ultimately what's true and maybe is true for this kind of person is he wanted the next challenge and he was starting a whole new life. And that was part of why he was being so hard on the partner, was he really wanted out, which sometimes can happen.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm. But I could see a conversation going something like, we're not friends, we don't have to be friends, and we might not be emotionally compatible, but our business is working, and I just need these 5 things from you to change, and some ground rules. If the behavior is name calling or insulting someone at meetings or whatever. Can that just be stopped?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question.
Well, chances are, when you set a boundary, this is another thing we always talk about. When you set a boundary, be ready for the switchback, which is that the person tries to put things back the way they have been. But I think that's great, Johanna, because it's so concrete what you're saying. And actually, what you could do is say, if you do forget this and you do blah, the code word is going to be whatever, and I'm walking out of the meeting. We're ending the meeting there, or something to that effect.
I appreciate your hopefulness in partnerships. divorce rate is up, over 50%, and business partnerships is probably way over that. And, we see a lot of this. And
I mean, I think it really goes back to, if you want to be in a business partnership or you want to even be in a personal partnership, you really have to take a look at yourself all the time and check in, you know, and not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody has that introspective.
Right. You gene. Do have to find out if the other, if the partner is willing to adjust to your five requests. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wish I had more. I wish that we had more personal experience to draw on and tell narrative stories and.
Oh, I think like this, your experience has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really.
And the health of your partnership is a good model for all.
Right, and that's really where you're coming from. So we appreciate that. So that's it for this segment. We want to thank Sean and Johanna. And how can people find out more about you?
Well, they can visit us at seagullhair.com or give us a call, 212-989-1807, and schedule a haircut or color or blowout, whatever you want.
They're the best.
I also have a more superfluous site called Sean, S-H-A-U-N, surething.com, where there's a lot of unnecessary information that I just like to put out there about myself.
Another good point, partners should always have avenues of expression that are just theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And anything from any site for you?
Oh, well, sure. There's johannafateman.com or my Twitter. I just joined Elo.
No, everyone's leaving Facebook to go to Elo. It's so crazy right
now.
Yeah, it was bound to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so join us next time for another round of My Crazy Office Podcast. And don't forget to send your questions and your stories to info@mycrazyoffice.co.
Join us next time for another My Crazy Office Podcast. And don't forget to send your questions to info@mycrazyoffice.co.